this edition of the Hagman Report. Can you hear me okay? Eric the Tech, can you hear me all right? And there we go. How's that? Nothing like getting the pre-show stuff done on there. Welcome to Hagman. It's the Hagman Report for today. It is Tuesday, Election Day, such as it is, 2025, Tuesday, November 4, 2025. So I'm sure by now, it is. This, I believe, is a precursor of what the midterms are going to be like. Obviously, that that immoral, spiritually bankrupt piece of crap. I'm holding back Abigail Spanbottom. Apparently has won Virginia. All right.
It's all fake news. It's phony stuff. It didn't happen.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. But there you have it. So there's that. Then of course, you've got really, it would appear. Now, look, I don't know. Just from what I'm reading and what I'm seeing, it would appear that you're going to have a communist Muslim mayor in New York, which I really find offensive and insulting, because I do remember in the days after 9/11, having a detective from NYPD take me around behind the tape and seeing the bloodstained concrete of those who leapt to their deaths. And, look, I get it that it's not what it appeared to be. But the fact is, we're missing two huge buildings. We're about 3,000 people. And certainly there is a Muslim component to this, no matter how you slice it. So there it is. So I take that personally. And beyond that, beyond the Islamic component, of course, he's an avowed communist. He shouldn't be. He should have never, ever, ever, ever been allowed in this country. Ever. Never. But then, what do you expect? Because you got Ilhan Omar, you've got Rashida Tlaib, you got all these people. And then, of course, you look at the communities, just go to Minnesota. What are they drinking in Minnesota? I mean, seriously, what are they smoking? What are they drinking? Do I even have to get into it? I'm not going to. It's just so bizarre. It's just sad. It really is. It's sad. Yeah, okay. I guess we're not going to have that sound.
Sad.
Thank you. There we go. Donald Trump said. All right. Here's what I'm going to do. Eric the Tech, I'm going to send you something right now. And thank you, Leon. I didn't catch this. Since we're leading off with politics here, I got a great show. I think I do. I think I planned this out pretty well. I have something here. A couple of things I want to go over. Kind of like a triage of where things are at. What I really think that we need to be paying attention to. All right. But first, and Eric the Tech has just cleared our system here. My system, it should be on your system now, is a link. Now, this is a video from John Bowne. I don't know how many people saw this video. I'll check the chat here if you've seen this or not. And it's a pretty doggone good video. And again, it speaks to the events in New York. It speaks to the larger issue here. It reminds me of my time, like I said, in the week after. I don't know what day that was, but and it really broke my heart too a couple of weeks later, because I was working in New York at the time, off and on, traveling to and from, seeing I don't remember exactly what street this was, maybe two, three blocks away from the towers. Probably maybe 3 or 4 blocks. Okay. I don't recall exactly where this was. And I do have photographs of this. But there was this chain link or this, not chain link, a wire fence that was put up to keep people away from the dangerous parts of the cleanup effort and recovery effort, or as it was. And this was packed with pictures. Have you seen me? Pictures. Some ripped, some look like they were ripped out of a family scrapbook. Flowers, teddy bears. And this, I mean, just to see that, and what's more, to feel that. I don't even know how to describe that. And then to be, you know, taken back and, you know, it wasn't anything where it was just some of the stuff, you know, people wouldn't really want to see. Okay. But to see the carnage, and they were still actually, they were still pulling bodies and body parts out when I was there. And the smell, I can still smell. Like, it's the smell, just the fearing, or the feeling, the feeling I got. It was an eerie feeling. And seeing some of the firemen there who lost, I mean, wiped out entire fire companies. So here we are. That was in 2001. So 24 years later, you've been in New York City. You got what you wanted. You've been conquered from within. It looks like you guys. I don't know. I don't know what the results are. I'm just looking at the trending news here. So apparently, you're going to get what you want. Good luck with that. Good, and thank God I don't have to. I will never ever step foot in New York City again. Certainly, I closed up shop out of New York a number of years ago. Never to work there ever again, because again, you've got this cancer from within, these enemies from within. All right, Eric the Tech, if you've got this, again, there might be a front end loaded ad on this. If so, folks, it is what it is. This is John Baum. This sent to me by Leon. Thank you very much, Leon. Sent to me from Leon. And Downward Spiral, America's Shift Towards Islamification. Now, before you start that, Eric, I just want to say this. We've got a lot of problems here. You've got the communist influence. You've got the Islamic influence. You've got all of these different isms. And, I mean, they're all negative. But you also have this public that's been programmed to accept this, tolerate this, and to believe this is what's best. And that's really the real problem here. Is the people out there who believe, oh, this is going to be so, to listen to the public, man, that's scary. But tonight we're going to triage what we need to, in my view, what we need to take a look at, and hopefully leave you a little bit better off and more informed than you were when you came tonight. But let's hit this one. This is Downward Spiral from The Baum Report.
We came here to remake the state in the image of our people.
Mom, Donnie is practicing Taqiya.
1,000%. 1,000%.
He's presenting.
Dude, the Muslims are laughing at you guys. Like, this is the funniest thing. Like, dude, give it 50 more years. Entire New York's gonna be Muslim. And then before you know it, it's gonna be Sharia courts. And then, like, y'all are, it's like shooting yourself in the foot.
And I'll also say that it's Muslim money. the PACs that have supported Zahran, or a particular PAC that has supported Zahran, is probably over 80% of Muslim American donors in this country.
81%, so 81 of the mosques that he surveilled were in some way or other preaching jihadism and hatred of non-Muslims. And this is in the United States.
The 2011 study, Sharia and Violence in American Mosques, published in the Middle East Quarterly, surveyed 100 U.S. mosques selected proportionally by state Muslim population between 2007 and 2010, and found that 81% contained texts advocating or justifying violence in the name of Sharia or jihad. 51% calling for overthrowing non-Islamic governments, with 84.5% of imams recommending these materials during services. Counter studies claim U.S. mosques largely deter extremism and reject violence, rendering the 81% figure a provocative but unreliable indicator of widespread jihadism. Whatever the case may be, these studies need to be immediately replicated in the name of U.S. national security, because America has a history with Islamic extremism going back to its founding. Thomas Jefferson's 1786 meeting with Tripoli's ambassador revealed the Quranic justification for enslaving non-Muslims and seizing their ships, prompting his rejection of tribute payments that had consumed nearly 20% of U.S. federal revenue since 1784. As president in 1801, Jefferson responded to Tripoli's declaration of war with naval blockades and the First Barbary War from 1801 to 1805, ending in a treaty that freed American captives and halted tribute. This conflict solidified the U.S. opinion that Islamic law was incompatible with republican government, which later influenced subsequent restrictions. From 1790, the Naturalization Act excluded most Muslims, while late 19th century rulings like Ex parte Marias, 1894, denied naturalization on religious grounds. The McCarran-Walter Act of 1952 retained ideological bars against those advocating government overthrow or tied to totalitarian ideologies, effectively restricting certain Muslim activists. Enter the Legion of Treason. In 1990, Congress repealed Title II's ideological exclusions via a Moynihan Amendment, passing the Senate and signed by President George H.W. Bush, easing short-term visa restrictions but maintaining permanent residency screening. Years later, yeah, during the Obama administration...
You can stick me up for a second, because I'm going to make a comment on this. First of all, about the Barbary Wars, that's what got me banned from Coast to Coast on Sunday nights, because they had a different host, and they brought me on to talk about. At the time, there's a lot of piracy going on, and a lot of I don't know when was that, maybe 10 years ago, 12 years, whatever. But there were attacks on shipping vessels. And it really, it was like the replay of the Barbary Wars, you know, and it was at the hands of Muslims. And I'll tell you, I remember this because I got cut off and I'm like, what the hell's going on here? Yeah, what are you doing? I'm just giving the facts. No, you can't say that. I said, the hell I can't. Don't tell me what I can't say. Hey, I was as irritable back then as I am now. We had words. And because I had to stay up, you know, my time, it was like 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. Maybe it was two in the morning. I said, I'll tell you what, you can, you know, F off and take me off your call list. Well, that was done anyway. See, I got a problem with that, obviously. Just saying. But that was Sunday, okay? Apparently, that was a different, it was definitely a different host. And it was a different time and a different producer and different. I don't know if that was an autonomous show, but it was certainly part of it. Anyway, but hey, it's on record. I'm not talking out of school. You know, and I don't even remember the host's name at the time, but he fought me on air a little. Well, he fought back on air saying, no, it's not, you know, okay, what is it then? What the hell is it? So that segment right there that you saw, and you can go back and watch this. You can find this on band.video. That segment right there is important to me for that reason and for the importance of the understanding. Well, that reason too, that reason especially because that's most of America today. They're either afraid to talk out or they don't know history. Well, I don't know history or don't want to confront history, which is why I'm big on history. And pretty irritable anyway. So that's that part. And then the act, the McCarran Act, you know, again, think about this. On what planet is it okay for the U.S. to say, well, you know, we have a law against, you know, competitive ideologies or using the government architecture to spread your ideology, spread your communist or Islamic or whatever, it's like kind of the same thing, into our government, right? But again, what planet is okay to rescind that? Because, you know, just because. So George Herbert Walker Bush obviously signed off as the president, but again, it was Congress that you know repealed most of the elements of that, and here we are. Continue.
America did a 180, authorizing engagement with nonviolent Islamists like the Muslim Brotherhood. After the Arab Spring, the U.S. cut funding for Egypt's democracy programs, but kept giving $1.5 billion a year in military aid. When Morsi was removed in 2013, the U.S. briefly paused the aid, then started it all back up again. After rebels led by former al-Qaeda commander Ahmed al-Sharaa, a.k.a. Abu Muhammad al-Jilani, toppled Assad in December of 2024, the U.S. quickly embraced the change. Biden lifted al-Sharaa's $10 million bounty. The U.S. is now engaging Syria's new leader at the UN and with top officials, betting on his promises of elections and stability to counter Iran and ISIS, despite his jihadist past. And despite the overall goal of Islam clearly on the jihadist warpath of global conquest.
We take the jizya from the non-Muslims, the combatants, the enemies of Allah and His Rasul, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. We're taking in exchange for your blood, for your life. Do you understand? We're taking in exchange for your blood, for your life.
It is time for us to stop calling Islam a religion. It is a civilization that governs every aspect of your life. And most importantly for us in the U.S., it is a civilization that is duty-bound, according to the Quran, to install Sharia law worldwide.
Thomas Jefferson would not be pleased. John Bound reporting for InfoWars. Right.
There you go. So, folks, if you go to HagmanPI.com, once the show is up, usually an hour or so after the program's over, maybe sometimes 2 hours, it takes a little bit of time for things to kind of fit right. The show notes, all you have to do to get to the show notes, the links to the sources is click on the title and it'll open up all the show notes for tonight. Again, now that's going to be accepted, but you can find that on band.video. All right. So again, tonight, obviously, they're counting the winners. But have you noticed, folks, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed in terms of voting integrity. Well, I shouldn't say that. There have been some improvements. But if you look at Arizona, specifically Maricopa County, I think the other Pima County, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm certain of Maricopa County in Arizona. And if you look at some places outside of Philadelphia as well as some places in New Jersey, You're seeing really the same script to play out, right? We've seen this before. It hasn't been fixed. It hasn't been addressed, or it hasn't been addressed rapidly enough. And now we are in the same position as we were in 2020, aren't we? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, gee whiz. Look at these ballots, or you can't. There was I believe it was Pennsylvania or maybe New Jersey. I know Jack Posobiec put up a video clip about it. Was from 2020 where, you know, despite a court order for poll or ballot watchers or the people who watch the ballots being counted, you know, the Republicans were not allowed into the room despite a court order, which, you know, again, we find ourselves in the same position by the same people or group of people, funded by the same groups of people, funded by the same organizations. And yet are we supposed to be surprised this is happening today? No, we shouldn't be. And do you think without foreign money that we would see even the possibility of a win by a communist Muslim in New York City, where the greatest loss of life took place, allegedly, ostensibly? And I would say pretty much, at least as a major part of the whole operation, at the hands of Islamic terrorists. Okay. And again, whether or not the intricacies of that aside, you still have that Islamic component regardless. So, but here we are 24 years later, and this is pretty much a jab in the eye to the 3,000 people and their families, in my view, at the very least. So, you know, if he does pull this off as a win. Again, I'm not seeing any numbers right now, but I would expect that to take place. And so I mentioned the foreign inflow, foreign money and bankrolls and such. Well, guess what? Video 5, Eric the Tech, Video 5. It's only 45 seconds long, but here is Linda Sarsour. You know her. You know that name. I know you do. Saying the quiet part out loud and actually saying in public, yeah, I really can't. I'm not going to talk now, but after the win, we'll tell you how we did it and where the money came from. This wasn't a grassroots thing. Have you seen this? At 5. Here it is, 45 seconds.
Right now, I'm a little more quiet because I'm on the quiet side of this race. But I'm going to tell you that once November 4th comes around, I will tell the story. The story is not just, that it's random that Zohran ascended to this place. It is our Muslim American communities. And I'll also say that it's Muslim money. The PACs that have supported Zohran, or a particular PAC that has supported Zohran, is probably over 80% of Muslim American donors in this country. High net donors, grassroots donors. And I want to make the point that the Unity and Justice Fund PAC, which is the CARE Super PAC, was the largest institutional donor to the pro-Zohran PAC in New York.
All right. Now, and you can follow, this woman, obviously, look, she wasn't born overseas, all right? She was born in Brooklyn. She's got six brothers and sisters and whatever. And her father owned this market in Crown Heights in Brooklyn, aptly named Linda's. And she was activated rather early in her life, and she has connections to Black Lives Matter. And you remember all the women's marches, especially in the New York City metropolitan area, and even in D.C. and some other major metropolitan areas. Yeah, she was involved in pretty much a lot of them, if not all of them. She was a co-chair of the 2017 Women's March, you know, the 2017 Day Without Women, the 2019 Women's March. She's the executive director of the Arab American Association of New York. And Time magazine aptly, you know, profiled her as one of the 100 most influential people in 2017, right? It's always good to get that intelligence community bump by a publication like Time magazine, right? So, but again, if you look at her integration with the anarchist groups, you cannot separate the communist anarchist groups such as BLM, whatever's left of that, not much anymore, because I'll show you why. But you cannot separate these anarchist groups from the Islamic groups. Well, let me put it this way. You can't separate the Islamic groups very, very much from the anarchist groups. You get the idea, right? There's so much intertwined funding as well as some operational concepts and operational, actual operations, I should say, on the ground. So that there's that. But understand organizations like the Council on Arab America, Council on Arab American Islamic Relations. Wow. A big part in that as well. So there's CARE money. And where does CARE get their money from? And let's not forget the Holy Land Foundation. CARE is an unindicted co-conspirator with in the Holy Land Foundation back in 2005. And I covered that in detail in, I think, 2006, 2007, way back then. I just found actually a trove of documents that covers all of that. So this has been going on for some time. Even before, obviously, the smoke didn't clear from 9/11, here we are. I mean, you know, we're looking at this and we're seeing this, and George W. Bush, that shrub, you know, embracing the Islamic. Oh, we can't, you know, we have to be careful, right? Shut up. Just shut up. You're part of the reason why we're here at this juncture. So, But I'll tell you what, because of this integration, especially with funding, let's see how well let's do a check on BLM, because again, you cannot separate the two. Now, the next two videos, I'm going to tell you the next two videos. Look, I cannot spend my time bleeping words out. So if you had any impressionable children listening to this, I'm just going to warn you, there's a couple of F-bombs in some of these. Let me see if this is really necessary to bring me. You know what? Again, you know, I've got a problem with my mouth, all right? But I certainly don't drop... I don't talk like some of these people. Is it okay to talk like you know, like this on air to these videos? Is it okay? Is it suddenly okay to lose all of your gravitas or what, if you had any to begin with? But you know, people. So, and then of course you could say, well, what the hell are you doing playing that? Well, because some of the information you should. Look, the information is accurate. Plus, got to give credit where credit's due, despite the mouth. So we're going to go to cut. Let's see here. This is about BLM because, again, we need an update on BLM. Eric the Tech, do you see it in my show notes? Oh, there it is right there. Video 4. It's 2.5 minutes long. And Here's the funding, the misuse of funding for the BLM organization. Why am I putting this out there? Because this is for all of the people like in Hollywood and for all the people in New York City who said, oh yeah, and DC and all of the big cities where we got to pay BLM. And remember, they painted the walkways, you know, Black Lives Matter and the NFL and all this, the basketball stuff. Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. Well, how much do they matter? How much was this a serious organization from the beginning? No, never was. And here's the proof that cut four.
Buckle up, bitches. We're about to toss some salads. Hey, libtards, guess what? BLM lied to you.
What lie? Tell me the lies of Black Lives Matter. Tell me the lie you finna talk about. Go ahead.
Calm down, nutty professor. Let me explain. BLM co-founder Patrice Cullors stepped down after spending BLM funds to secure millions of dollars worth of luxury real estate in uppity white neighborhoods, including a $5.8 million 7,400 square foot mansion in Southern California, complete with a soundstage, a music studio, a pool, and a two-bedroom guest house. You know, because oppression and all that shit. Patrice Cullors was eventually replaced by an equally shady Shalamaya Bowers. And you'll never believe this. $2.15 million in BLM funds was used to pay a company owned by Shalamaya for consulting services.
For the first time ever anywhere, the 40...
And then you got BLM board member Danielle Edwards. Wait for it. She also owned her own firm and was paid $1,063,000 in BLM funds. What are the odds?
United States of America, Donald.
Patrice Cullors' brother, Paul, a self-taught graffiti artist, walked away with $840,000 for 1 year's worth of unspecified security. His business, Cullors Protection LLC, doesn't even have a storefront. No. He operates a security firm from the comfort of his own home. Speaking of homes, Paul Cullors purchased a three-bedroom, two-bath bungalow in a lily-white cul-de-sac in L.A. for $637,000. Patrice Cullors' baby daddy, Damon Turner, was paid $969,000 in 2021 for creative services.
It's almost incomprehensible that they can exist right now.
BLM funds were used for private jets, luxury goods, and another $6.3 million for a 10,000 square foot mansion in Toronto. BLM played with your money so fucking much, they recorded a $9 million deficit in 2022. Look at all you stupid motherfuckers. It's hilarious. But I'll tell you what's not hilarious. Two men getting out of a four-door Kia and opening fire on a five-year-old little girl. The father and daughter were pronounced dead at the scene. No marches, no BLM, no Al Sharpton, no David Hogg, no AOC, no outrage, no accountability. Nothing. Business as usual. To everybody that blindly supported BLM, please wear a red nose when you go out in public from here on out. Clowns are easier to spot when in uniform.
Okay, you get the idea. So, I mean, the information was accurate as he stated. I did run through and pretty much verified all of that. And he showed the receipts on the screen. So, again, that's why I played that as opposed to redoing that and reboxing that, reformatting that, because despite the language issues, he certainly did probably more colorful and a lot more concise than I would have done. All right. So, just so we're clear, again, just so we're clear, we are experiencing a takeover from within our country. And I'm going to leave you with, or I'm going to, this episode is going to be filled with some historical context, the psychological and the intelligence operation of the, to provide the context for today's events, which also includes some of the burn bags, the new information against Comey and others found in burn bags. We're going to be getting that here shortly. I don't know how many people saw that, but it made me think, by the way, you know, it's like that's a very convenient trash archaeologist. I mean, trash archaeology. We used to have trash pulls. Okay. As an investigator, I would go out and pull trash from a dumpster. Yeah. I'm not proud of it, but you know, you climb in a dumpster and you dumpster dive, you grab usually for, specifically for industrial, espionage and stuff like that. So you go and they would have garbage bags. And this is before the cross cut shredders. Because we would grab bags full of shredded documents and, they would shred the documents, put them in bags and then toss them in the dumpster. So we'd go in and we'd get the, and we'd do this, you know, pretty consistently, pretty routinely. But that was only like one small part of the job, although not very glamorous, you know, but we'd take those bags and I remember spending days, sometimes days, recreating those documents from the shredded documents. Now, oh man, you know, now in the today with cross cut shredders, that's a little bit harder to do. You know, it's a little bit, you can see it's doable, but it's awful time consuming. So I hear. But back then, you just had the strips. And I've got a couple of photographs somewhere of the room filled with all the shredding material. Cause back then it was, that was just billable time, but we had to account for the time. And believe me, it was no fun. Okay, doing that, but we had, so anyway, I had picture, I could show you a picture of like, the piles of shredding and then the kind of before and after. And a lot of information, a lot of financial information was actually gained by that. And used by prosecuting authorities in cases of industrial espionage. So there's that. Where was I going with that? The burn bags. Yeah, there's some stuff there about this. So I'm at, and if you haven't heard about this again, maybe we can touch on this a little bit, but, burn bags were found by the FBI, of course. Apparently the FBI, they're like a bunch of pack rats. I don't know. Apparently. Sad. Yeah. Thank you, Don, or just President Trump. They are on their way out the door, out of the door, from Biden to President Trump this time. You know, obviously they had to get rid of some of the stuff that they were kind of keeping in corners and under the desks and wherever. I don't know where they're keeping them. So they stuffed them in burn bags.
Come on, man.
Tell me, I mean, you know something, at least be smart about it. If you're going to do it, I don't know. And even handwritten notes by Comey. You know, did you see that? Ooh, doggy. That's the good news. A lot of evidence uncovered that really drives home the fact that this country was experiencing a coup by the intelligence communities, by Brennan, by Clapper, by Comey, by the Department of Justice, by all of the usual suspects. But now we have the documentation, a lot of it that they thought they, you know, tossed. Why they didn't? I didn't say they were smart, right? About that, let me just, so that's kind of the good news. But here's something, Jack Posobiec was talking about this, and I have this from Jack. The grand juries that are being put together in the Southern District of Florida. Guess who's going to be in charge of the recently impaneled grand juries in SDFL? You want to guess? A guy by the name of Peter Friend, the head of the criminal division of the U.S. Attorney's Office in SDFL. Now, Who's that? Well, it's not so much who he is as to what his connections and what his ideology is. He donated over $2,300 to Harris, Kamala Harris, for president, and made a number of other donations to left-wing causes in 2024. But he's going to be in charge. Again, he's going to be in charge of the recently impaneled grand juries in SDFL. Now, those grand juries are going to convene on January 12th of 2026 to investigate Crossfire Hurricane and the Mar-a-Lago raid. Getting the warm fuzzies yet? And Biden, the Biden regime, they promoted him to head of the criminal division in November of 23. Now, he's buddies with Michael Thacker, a former federal prosecutor on Jack Smith on his team. Yeah. He oversaw the former U.S. Attorney Will Rosenzweig. Now, that guy was fired last month after Pam Bondi, or after Natalie Winters had made it known to Bondi that he was operating this anti-Trump blog. I mean, again, how stupid are these friggin' idiots? Thankfully, pretty stupid in some cases. So what are we left with after Biden? And because of foreign, and this is important, because of foreign money. Southern District of Florida is one of the most weaponized, politically weaponized federal district in the U.S. Now, there are some recent appointments that are kind of mitigating that, but still, there it is. So, again, do we have the warm fuzzies over grand juries? And if you don't, a little bit about grand juries, let me just... Let me see where I put this, because I wanted to touch on grand juries. I don't know if I let me see here. I'll find it. I don't have it right handy. I'll just say it this way. Grand juries are comprised of anywhere. Again, it depends on the jurisdiction, depends on the state. And most states have grand juries for the larger or the more serious indictments. Okay. But they're comprised of about anywhere between 16 and 23 jurors who are selected at random from voter rolls. There you go. But it's consistent with the demographic of the area. Okay. And, it's really interesting to see how it works. And a lot of times and there's a difference between a captive grand jury and a runaway grand jury, because you hear that all the time, you know. The runaway grand jury is somewhat, well, I don't want to get into that right now, but you get the idea. So this could end up kind of not so good, because impaneling a grand jury requires a voir dire process, right? Where you've got to approve, well, you've got to select the jurors somewhat differently than like a criminal or civil trial in a courtroom. But anyway, it doesn't necessarily mean that even despite all of this evidence, this could be a slam dunk. So I'm just saying, watch that, because we still have a lot of work to do within the court system. We cannot overstate how bad our country was manhandled by the Biden regime, and what we endured under that regime. And I'll tell you what, the more I see this, the more convinced I am that had Hillary got in, or not Hillary, but the same thing, and Harris got in, we would be pretty much DOA right now. or on the way to being DLA. Or we'd be in that state where we just haven't been, we weren't pronounced yet. So that much I believe. All right. I do want to show, I want to finish up this part with John Guandalo. You know, again, if we are looking at this situation in New York City, we're looking at all of these enclaves really from California to, from coast to coast and from border to border of Islamic concentrations. Do not take your eyes off this. You know, sometimes I don't talk enough about this, but do not take your eyes off of this. Because this is gaining so much momentum. But what's their, you know, are we to embrace? No, we are not to embrace these people. We cannot. They don't have the same ideology. They don't have the same belief system. Obviously, they don't worship the same God. The bottom line is we have nothing in common with these people. And they should not be in any positions of power, in my view. And that's just the way I see it. Because they cannot. Obviously, they cannot swear to uphold the Constitution when, in fact, they want to replace the Constitution with Sharia law. And that's a fact. John Guandalo states it a lot better than I can. This is cut 3. And it's just under, that's about 2.5 minutes, maybe a little more. Here it is.
Purpose of Islam, according to all Islamic doctrine, is to ensure that there is an Islamic state throughout the entire world called a caliphate, and under that, Sharia or Islamic law is the law of the land. That's it. Islam is no more complicated than that. Islam breaks the entire world into two parts, the Dar al-Islam, where Sharia is the law of the land, and the Dar al-Harb, the house or abode of war, where there is not Sharia as the law of the land. The function of Islam is to eliminate the Dar al-Harb until the entire world is a Dar al-Islam. And the vehicle to do that is called what? Jihad, which in 100% of all published Islamic law is only defined as warfare against non-Muslims. So let's just put that on the line. And so we're here talking national security issues. We have people here that are running for the office of President of the United States, and we have to begin there. And what I would put forth is that since, and actually prior to, but since 9/11, our entire national security apparatus has been unprofessional in its approach to this war, from the four-star generals to the office of the president to the national security staff to the leaders of DHS when it was created, the FBI, the CIA, and other agencies. Because we have said this has nothing to do with Islam, despite the fact that our warfighting doctrine says when you analyze an enemy, you start with who he says he is and why he's fighting. And 100% of this enemy that we're facing, from the jihadi in Chattanooga to the 9/11 hijackers and everybody before and in between, have all said we're Muslims waging jihad in the cause of Allah in order to impose Islamic law and establish caliphate, period. So that's what it is. And if we look in Islamic law, authoritative Islamic law, the kind you get at mosque bookstores, not at Barnes & Noble, you will see that 100% of them say that jihad is warfare against non-Muslims. And it's total warfare. It's not just guns and bombs. It's psychological warfare. It is political warfare. It's subversion. It is the whole nine yards. It's total warfare, something that our DOD has not been practicing. I would say you'd have to go back towards Reagan administration and maybe even beyond that. Complete and total war against non-Muslim.
All right. So, you get the idea. That's pretty much the crux of it. Not that you folks needed to hear or see that, but it's also a good reminder. It's a good primer for you to use maybe with your, who knows? I mean, Thanksgiving, play at the Thanksgiving table. You know, just grab the link from the show notes and, or not. It makes for a great entertaining time at the Thanksgiving table. Now, okay. So But all of this, you know, yeah, I, you know how I think, right? We had that, like, open a door at some point. We had to allow this to really take root in this country. And I always look for the different doors that were open, or the different people who opened those doors, and the time period in which that occurred. Now, Eric the Tech, this is, I'm going to have to coach on this a little bit. Cut one. But if you can just play the video from that link, because there's a bunch of other stuff in there. And now this is dated. This is a while ago. And that's kind of the reason for this. I wanted to show you that where we're at today had its roots a long time ago. And you've got this perfect, near perfect, but planned convergence of foreign influence, of pharmacia, you know, pharmaceuticals in the masses, the mind control and programming parts of the masses. You've got and by foreign influence, I'm talking about billionaires or people with money, you know, the usual suspects, right? But you have this really the satanic cabal of individuals, this Luciferian cabal. And I know how that sounds, right? Sounds like, you know, I've taken leave of my senses, but I really haven't, because at its core, it's Luciferian or satanic. And the names obviously are familiar, but then, you know, again, there are different moments in time that make a difference. If you look at history as like a, I don't know if you were, remember the encyclopedias, some of them came with like history of the world maps or timelines, history of the world. Remember those? Am I the only one that got those or paid attention to those? I think, I don't know, but you know what I'm talking about. But if you look at one of those in the timeline, there were certain events that, you know, were worthy of putting on one of those timelines. And as we got into, you know, the 1900s and now this century, there are more and more of these hinge moments that really make a difference. So I like to pay attention to those. This is one of those moments. And this is Hillary. Yes. Sorry about that. Hold on. But this is going back, I don't know, 30, 20, so at least 20 years. I'm not sure I have a date on this. Well, folks, I'll tell you what. This is from C-SPAN. What is it? It's 2004, actually. Sorry about that. Yeah, 21 years. Thank you, Eric the Tech. You're the man. Couldn't have said that better. 21 years. All right. Check this out. A little over 2 minutes. Here it is.
We have been given an extraordinary blessing. And at this moment in time, our country needs us. And we need people like George Soros, who is fearless and willing to step up when it counts. So please join me in welcoming George Soros.
I'm very, very proud to be introduced by Hillary. I've seen her in operation. I have great, great admiration for her. I see her deliver a speech in Davos about open society that explained the ideas better than anybody else that I've heard. I've seen her visit Central Asia, where I have foundations, and she was really very effective, more effective than most of our statesmen. And I think she hit the nail on the head when she said that there are people who have never been involved in a very active way in electoral politics, who now feel the need to do so. And I stand here before you as such a person. It is the first time that I feel that I need to stand up and do something really and become really engaged in the electoral process in this country. In my foundations, basically, I have provided financial support for people in those countries who believed in the idea of an open society.
So this, and this could go on, and you could find the entire C-SPAN clip on the archive of C-SPAN. But here he is admitting, obviously, to funding these, admitting 21 years ago to funding the overthrow of governments and, you know, providing money to activists. And if that clip didn't contain that, believe me, the entire thing does. But it's going to be in the show notes. That's cut one and just that what you saw there. But this could have been stopped a long time ago had we chosen to do so. And apparently we didn't, or we didn't have the, maybe everyone was compromised back then as well. All right. And I tend to think that there was a combination of things. There was a level of compromise of our lawmakers back then, as political officials back then, but there was also the greed factor as well as this new programmed mental posturing that, you know, hey, we want to be tolerant of pretty much all ideas, and we, you know, we're afraid to get called, you know, racist, Islamophobes, or whatever it might be. Now it's you know, kind of turning around a little bit based on the fatigue of all of this. So that was 2004. Thank you, Eric, for pointing that out. Again, we didn't get here just over the last 6 years or 5 years or the last 10 years. That was just one hinge moment that could be pointed out, that Soros is heavily involved, and his family, and by way of Alex Soros, Alex Soros as well, is also, you know, heavily involved in the operations and the funding of things. But here's the other side of that as well. Did you notice, let me pull that back up here. Patrick Byrne had a meeting with Senator Ron Johnson, and he had laid out all of the crimes of Obama and Biden and involving Soros, and he didn't do a damn thing about it. And here's, you think, wow, Johnson's really, like, he's all torqued off at this Arctic Frost investigation. He's saying there's no legitimacy for it whatsoever. It's all political. Well, yeah. But, you know, when you had the chance to do something about this years before, you chose not to, or you didn't. And, Biden, it's come out right now where Biden regime has, if you heard of Emeril Robinson, and, you know, if you attempt to fact check that, it's kind of funny because, boy, those fact checks are quick. No, there's no evidence that there's Biden created an enemies list. And Emeril Robinson was talking about the, you know, 700 people on a Biden enemies list with some targeted for neutralization. Whatever that means, I don't know what that means, but I know what the word neutralization means. Pending that was contingent with a second term or a Harris presidency. And so who was the puppet master behind that? Obviously, it was Obama and higher ups beyond Obama. But the Obama would be the direct middle manager of the whole process. But here we are. And now we have the selective outrage by nine senators saying, oh, my phones were tapped. Well, you know what? You didn't really give two craps about Americans, did you? Or that much about it, other than pay them lip service. When our phones were tapped, when our text messages and our emails were being read, did you? Now you're outraged. Now you're going to do something about it. Well, welcome to the party, pal. All the nine. Okay. And there's more. I can tell you there's more. So here we are. And this goes back to what I've often said too. You can certainly create an investigation, or you can create a investigative report and provide all of the evidence. As a matter of fact, Eric the Tech, let's do this right now, because I think this is important here. In my X bookmarks, the easiest way to find it, if I communicate this to you, in my X bookmarks, the first one by Catherine Herridge, in newly filed FBI records, Comey specifically, the Comey case, it reveals contents from five burn bags. I referenced this earlier. The classified and potentially incriminating records dating back to 2016. They were discovered in April, again, in those burn bags. So you got to think about this for a second. The outgoing regime at the FBI under Biden's control, they left in January, right? So they know they knew in November that they were going out the door. Well, again, what are you just kind of keeping this stuff and under the sofa pillow in your office? But hey, thankfully, they did. So, what did they find? And you can see that right there. I think that's the one, right? Yeah. Five burn bags, records from Mar-a-Lago search, January 6th Capitol breach, whatever happened on January 6th at the Capitol, the Crossfire Hurricane investigation, the classified appendix to the John Durham Special Counsel probe, the original CIA referral from our two former FBI Director James Comey, the disgraced son of a gun, Comey. Well, you can see this. You can read this. Just Catherine Herridge, and of course the picture of the photograph of the documents as well. And there's other photographs of the handwritten note by Comey. And look, this is all. Is it new? No. They knew this was going to happen. I mean, they knew this, but no, it's not new. But here's the proof. You want proof? Here's the proof. But again. I have to say this, you can go ahead and have all the proof you want, and you can tie it all nice together, and you can have all the inculpatory evidence, you know, all the charging documents or predicate for charging, put it all together, give it to the DA or the Attorney General or Department of Justice, whoever. And if there's nothing that happens, well, guess what? There's no justice. And also the fact that it's, you know, this long, man, justice delayed. And you know what they say, justice delayed is justice denied. But now we have this. So, okay, there's that. All right. And of course, you know, there's so much. Originally I thought the charging of Comey was pretty weak. But if in fact they expand that charging document or file additional charges or just really enforce to the max the penalties of those particular crimes he's charged with too, I believe. It probably should be more than that. Again, they probably should file additional charges. Then, okay, now we're talking. But again, we have to pass the bar. And understand, people might say, well, we'd go to the documents because we knew all this stuff. Well, the documents, when presented to a grand jury, and this is across the board, especially a grand jury that's biased, biased left, biased right, or in any way biased, whether anti-prosecution, pro-prosecution, again, pro-prosecution, usually runaway grand juries, anti-prosecution are usually captive grand jurors. So you got runaway and captive grand jurors. So in cases like this, this is my experience, okay? The evidence has to be so overwhelming. You've got to not just exceed the legal minimum of evidence, but you've got to exceed in the courtroom in front of the grand jury. You've got to absolutely convince, regardless of their bias, with documentation, that a crime was committed, where they cannot possibly in any, they'd have to be sitting back there in their deliberations. They'd have to say, how the hell are we going to get out of this? I mean, man, we can't. What are we going to do? There's no way. So in the normal case, again, there's a bar that one must exceed, and that's the beyond the reasonable doubt bar, which can be done circumstantially or with physical evidence or a combination of both or direct evidence. And grand juries, you know, they eat what you feed them, okay? Because it's a one-sided process and they're done in secret. And that's an old Fifth Amendment feature that they're done in secret because you don't know who's being charged, and you certainly don't want to drag somebody's good name through the mud in a regular preliminary hearing as you have in Pennsylvania, if in fact they're not guilty. So that's why the origin of, I think Pennsylvania and Virginia or Pennsylvania and Massachusetts, there's two states that don't require grand juries for charging of misdemeanors and above. Anyway, I digress. But that's a high bar. There might be a point when they say, oh man, holy cow. Yeah, what are we going to do? So for those people, by the way, who are triggered by this, I got to show you something here. Have you seen this? The White House has a very special My Safe Space at the White House. Hey, folks, have you seen this? Have you? Oh. Ultimate level trolling by Donald Trump. If you want to put up page one, this is My Safe Space at the White House. It's whitehouse.gov/My Safe Space. I think that's the URL, but it's kind of funny. There it is on your screen. And, it's classic Trump. I have to say, whoever designed this and put this up is fantastic. Great job on this. And if you scroll down, there's, it's funny. Sombreros. And I mean, folks, you have to just go there by yourself and take your time and go through that and just have fun. Okay. Because I can't really explain it to you. I would not do it justice. So there's My Safe Space at the White House. All right. So to really kind of contextualize everything we're seeing right now, I'm going to work backwards a little bit. Backwards in time. Remember that I was talking about those old timelines. You get the timeline history of the world, you know, from encyclopedias. Well, let's go away with the U.S. Let's go back a little bit. Man. Not too far. The discovery, which we kind of sort of knew, right? But I'm not 100% sure. But remember Elon Musk and Doge and their efforts and what they discovered? I'm getting to a point here, ultimately. This is cut 7. Again, moving from the present back relatively quick right now. How about 9 million Social Security numbers? were given to illegals, the illegal invaders over the last 4.5 years, 9 million. So we knew, obviously, they're getting benefits and such, but social security numbers, all weekend, all ride pass into the U.S. Watch this, cut 7.
He's brilliant. He's going to be working to make sure that individuals who got social security numbers in this country should be using them for the right things, and they shouldn't be on our benefit programs. You know, we have over 6,000 individuals that have been identified through their work already that have been on the terrorist watch list, that they are known criminals.
How does that happen, Madam Secretary?
It happens when you put a train wreck like Joe Biden in the White House, and it's going to be a lot of work to clean it up. But just in the last 4.5 years, we've had over 9 million people get Social Security numbers that are not U.S. citizens. So they may be people who have some sort of legal status, but a lot of them are illegals that were given a Social Security number in just the last 4.5 years that we're going to have to figure out if they should be here, if they are here legally under a program, and if they are here illegally, then they certainly shouldn't be using that Social Security number to be on our programs.
Yeah, and you get the idea. Again, the link will be at hangmanpi.com under this program description. All right. So now you have the illegal invasion. It was almost as if the no holds barred regime really went into overdrive, obviously, to destroy this nation. We're finding out a lot more. Pete Hegseth came out with something, and I saw this and I thought, you know, I gotta watch this again and again and again. And then I gotta look deeper into this. And what I found was just absolutely mind-boggling. The Department of Defense at the time, but now, and I'll just say DOD. Oh. And think about Austin and all the people associated with the defense posturing of our country during that 4.5 years. We'll hurry up and get to this. This is cut 2. Have you seen this? Digital escorts for the Department of War? Digital escorts? Digital escorts? You can't meet. No, I don't mean that. Nah, this has a different connotation, different meaning to it. Have you seen this? Oh, man, if you haven't, buckle in. Here's cut 2. It's just over 2 minutes.
Last month, the Department of Defense was made aware of an Obama-Biden-era legacy program called Digital Escorts. For nearly a decade, Microsoft has used Chinese coders, remotely supervised by U.S. contractors, to support sensitive DoD cloud systems. The program was designed to comply with contracting rules, but it exposed the department to unacceptable risk. I mean, if you're thinking America first and common sense, this doesn't pass either of those tests. So I initiated an immediate review of this vulnerability, and I want to report our initial findings. So the use of Chinese nationals to service Department of Defense cloud environments, it's over. We've issued a formal letter of concern to Microsoft documenting this breach of trust, and we're requiring a third-party audit of Microsoft's digital escort program, including the code and the submissions by Chinese nationals. This audit will be free of charge for U.S. taxpayers. I'm also tasking the Department of Defense experts with a separate investigation of the digital escort program and the Chinese Microsoft employees that were involved in it. These investigations will help us determine the impact of this digital escort workaround. Did they put anything in the code that we didn't know about? We're going to find out. Additionally, all Department of Defense software vendors will identify and terminate any Chinese involvement in DoD systems. It blows my mind that I'm even saying these things in such common sense that we ever allowed it to happen. That's why we're attacking it so hard. We expect vendors doing business with the Department of Defense to put U.S. national security ahead of profit maximization. I'm committed, like the president is, to ensuring that our national security networks are secure. Again, it's America first, and it's okay. Common sense. This never should have happened.
Never should have happened in the first place. But we can repeat that all over and over again. But again, this was not an oversight. This was by design. And you notice he mentioned Obama and then Biden. This took place. Actually, this took place. It preceded really Obama, and there was an advent of Microsoft, okay, a rise of Microsoft and the infiltration of the Communist Chinese Party. The element with the Communist Chinese influence of Microsoft kind of infused into the Department of Defense, and a lot of backdoors in the software. And of course, Doge. Hey, they found it, and oh my goodness. So that's not like a new, brand new thing. That's, it's new to many, but I don't believe that. I think that was like a month and a half, maybe 6 weeks, 8 weeks old. But anyway, so at least he's doing something about it. But go figure, digital escorts. Okay, so what I want to get to, and I'll throw this in here too. This is video 6. This has no sound to it. You can just put it up next to me when you're ready. Again, going backwards on that timeline, you know, we just heard recently President Trump is limiting press access to the press office in the West Wing. Take a look at this. The picture on your right, the very right, the video on your very right, those are press reporters, press people in the U.S. Capitol. I believe that is the Judiciary Committee or the Intelligence Committee. I'm not 100% sure. It was one of the two. And what are they doing there? They're in, the representatives are gone at break. They snuck back in and watch. They're taking photographs, taking pictures of the documents for the members, of the members. And you wonder why we can't have nice things. Put away your papers, ladies and gentlemen, because we're snooping eyes. So the press caught photographing documents. That's from December of 2019. So it's not new. So, and again, all of these steps that we should have seen or should have done something, we should have done something about that right there at that moment. And maybe there was some sort of sanction to those particular people, but the problem is much wider and much deeper. And I will explain that too. We're going to go right to this. I really want to show this to you. I really kind of want to go back in time a little bit. This has a lot to do right now with the structure. This has a lot to do with our intelligence agencies in the U.S. This has a lot to do with police, with the county sheriffs, with investigative bodies. This also has a lot to do with you can use this as the template, for example, of attempts against President Trump, the assassination attempts against President Trump. There's a lot here. There's a lot here. I sat through 10 and a half hours over the course of the weekend, and when I had the chance of archived footage of a documentary that pulled archived footage. Let me be clear, because if I was to look for the archived footage or pay to get the archive footage is oof. But as you watch this, I want you to think about a couple of things. Think about January 6th, everything that happened there. The behavior of the police, whether it's the Capitol Police or the FBI. Think about all of the current things with the FBI, with the CIA. Everything that's happening today as you watch this. This source video A and the cut A of source video A. This is just a small section of, again, 10 and a half hours worth of heady stuff. But it gives you some insight, and this is so important. Again, you've got to, think about what happened then, and I'm talking about Dallas 1963, and then the cover-up of the Warren Commission, and then, of course, the Garrison probe, and what happened to many there. Think about how this was structured. How this assassination was carried out, and why. I know, a lot of Kennedy, JFK. Look, I'm looking at the actions of the police. I'm looking at the actions of the FBI, the Secret Service, as opposed to the wider plot. I'm looking at specific actions here. And I want to point something out, and I think that this is important for today. And this tells you, kind of gives you an example of how we got here, what the operation manual is even today, how this could be compared to Butler, how this could be compared to many things. But the behavior of the feds and even the corruption of our city officials, from the mayor of Dallas, in my view, to at that time, to other corrupt officials, how they all work together, or they all answer to the same boss or series of bosses. So this is from source video A, from a documentary. And if there, let me just add this, okay? Because I was about ready to take my 45 and put a 3 o'clock. When was it? Yesterday morning? 3 o'clock. No, it was this morning. I wanted to put a bullet right through my monitor because whoever adds background music, stop it. Stop it. Oops. Background music where background music should not exist. And bad background music at that. But there I go. All right, this is source video. I cut A. It's about 10 minutes into 10 and a half hours. And I'm not lying when I say that. But okay, let me take you back to 63 and watch this with a critical eye of today's events and pretty much everything that's happening with our FBI. Hey, under Comey, for crying out loud, is it happening today? I'm sure some people, but certainly within the Biden regime. And just consider the template. Here's cut A. Here it is.
Just about 30 seconds ago, the president finished a 10-minute appearance at the parking lot across the street from the hotel, and he is on his way up. We expect him to walk through this door at any moment. Had several false starts, so to speak, that the president is coming. When he does, of course, there will be a large round of applause. And the Eastern Hills High School band, 79 members, will break out with Hail to the Chief. So you'll have no doubt when he does arrive. When the president appeared out in the parking lot, he broke one of the cardinal rules of security. In fact, he broke it two or three times. He went out into the crowd, and of course, Secret Service men find this the most nervous time of any presidential appearance. As long as the Secret Service men can keep the crowd away from the president, they have a good chance of protecting him. But once he moves into a crowd, the Secret Service men are nearly immobilized in protecting him. Another rule is that anyone who approaches the president should have both hands visible and empty. And as you can tell in a crowd, there's no way to determine that. So whenever the president does move out into a crowd for handshaking and backslapping and exchanging pleasantries, he is always at the mercy of the crowd, and the Secret Service is at its least effective position. On September 6, 1901, those two rules were broken, and it ended in tragedy. That was the day that President William McKinley was appearing at the Pan American Exposition in Buffalo, New York. And at a public reception, the crowd moved in around him, and the three Secret Service men who were guarding him had no chance to screen the people approaching him. Because it was a hot day, the Secret Service also allowed persons to have handkerchiefs in their hands to wipe their perspiring brows. It just so happened that one of the thousands of handkerchiefs in that large hall covered a revolver in the hand of 28-year-old Leon Czolgosz. He was an unemployed mill worker. He said he was an anarchist. He was also was a man with a long history of mental illness. And as in many important occasions of the world, no one seemed to sense that anything different was going to happen. When McKinley reached out to shake Czolgosz's hand, it looked like a familiar scene, the scene of the President of the United States shaking hands with Fred Nobody. The assassin shattered that picture quickly. He slapped McKinley's hand away and fired two shots point blank. In an instant, McKinley's attacker was driven to the floor. As the president was being helped to a chair, McKinley murmured, "Don't let them hurt him." 7 days later, McKinley was dead. Oddly enough, the assassination attempt was staged in the Temple of Music, quite an ironical note, and there was a quiet Bach sonata being played in the background when the two fatal shots rang out. Now, here comes Vice President Johnson, Governor Conley.
Because I can't stand to hear that background, whatever that background crap is. And you get the idea. And again, did you know? Maybe I think that was maybe if I would have let it play. I think there was an admission there where Lee Harvey Oswald was reportedly on the radar of the FBI. As a matter of fact, they interviewed Lee Harvey Oswald 2 weeks before the assassination. Yes, they did. But they didn't disclose that. But isn't that interesting? Not in that piece, I guess. That had to be later on. Anyway, it's still valid. But did you notice they were talking about McKinley there? How'd they describe him? Did any of that sound familiar? Emotionally troubled? Mentally, you know, impaired? Emotionally troubled? He was a loner? And people say, he seemed all right to me. He was, you know, I didn't know him. He kind of fit in. He blended. But you see them planting the seeds? Out of all of the things to talk about, calling up the Secret Services at that moment in time. Again, this is the day before, I believe, President Kennedy was shot. When he appeared earlier in the day, when he appeared at the Fort Worth, his previous engagement prior to going to the trademark. But isn't it interesting how the media, what the media did there? And the media talking about the, you know, almost victim blaming Kennedy, saying he broke protocol and the Secret Service couldn't protect him. And then right away they go to the 1901 McKinley assassination. And they describe the loner, the emotionally troubled person. You've heard that before, right? Programming the masses. Sound a lot familiar? Does any of this, you get the feeling that you've heard this before back then, maybe? All right, let's go to cut B. I'm not sure what the heck. I put this down here for a reason. I don't know what it is. We're all going to find out together. Let's go to cut B. This is 2 minutes plus. Here it is.
There has been an interesting development in the case of Lee Harvey Oswald, the 24-year-old former Marine, avowed Marxist, and member of the Committee of Fair Play for Cuba. Not the Free Cuba Committee, as had been suggested here earlier, the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, the pro-Castro group. This interesting development, still highly speculative, but with all sorts of possibilities. His personnel records have been sent to Dallas and to Washington for examination, and they have disclosed a letter he wrote to then Secretary of Navy John Connally, who is now the governor of Texas and who was wounded yesterday in the shooting that killed President Kennedy.
The conversation here, frankly, unofficially, cannot help but speculate that these unfortunate events have suddenly projected Mr. Nixon once again and very firmly into the presidential picture.
Will the nation be all right in the few months ahead?
Oh, I'm not going to predict anything of that. I just say this. The American nation is a people of great common sense, and they are not going to be stampeded or bewildered.
Would you have any advice for the American people at this time?
No, as I said, I know the American people will stand solid, and they will not be stampeded.
Thank you, Mr. President.
All right. Thank you.
The mechanics of the takeover are already in operation.
Now, Defense Secretary McNamara and McGeorge Bundy are briefing him in such terms as mega deaths. White House and Pentagon shorthand for the millions of deaths which are now in the hands of President Lyndon Johnson in case there should be a thermonuclear exchange. The words death of Earth are being exchanged
Moscow
once
radio
again.
Radio commentator Valentin Zorin, one of their respected, as far as the Soviet goes, mouthpieces of the Kremlin, is trying to counter charges on Moscow radio that President Kennedy was a victim of a leftist fanatic. He has said, those who know how the security of President Kennedy is organized know that it is not possible for a fanatic to commit such an assassination. A political crime, thoroughly prepared and planned, has taken place, Valentin Zorin says. And this terribly inflammatory statement by one of the kingpins of Soviet propaganda in Moscow, he went on to say, quote, it is not accidental that it took place in the southern states, which are well known as a stronghold of racist and other fascist scum. It is precisely here that Goldwater, referring, of course, to Arizona Senator Barry Goldwater, who is one of the contenders for the presidency, gets his support. We repeat, in case anybody could mistake the import of these words, that this is Soviet propaganda broadcast by Moscow radio commentator Valentin Zorin. Zorin went on to charge that the president slain was inspired by forces opposed to President Kennedy's policy of improving relations with the Soviet Union.
So now I remember why. Wow. Yeah, I didn't put any notes with that because I figured I'd recognize that. But there's a lot there, isn't there? Oh, man. Okay. There's just a crap ton of things there. First of all, you've got the incident itself, the assassination, the national trauma. Then you have... So you've got, think about this. We talk about trauma-based mind control, trauma-based programming all of the time, right? What did we just witness there? National trauma. And then you've got, you've got the talk, the immediate talk of the threat of nuclear annihilation. Remember to get under the desk and, you know, hey, bomb shelters. The world's going to end. So immediately the media goes to that. And then, of course, you've got the demonization of Russia. Now, different context here, admittedly, but you can almost see some parallels. Can you not? I think you can. So a very piece of that video is extremely rich in a lot of ways. And then, of course, the conservative, if you remember politics back then, or if you studied politics of that time, Goldwater, who was very much a conservative, I mean, a stalwart conservative, at least as he was portrayed by members of by the U.S., the people within the U.S., as well as other nations, very, very much a conservative. Can't have that. Can't have that. And then talk about the power restructuring. Almost like it was a pre-written script. Gotta say. And then we have this cut C. Again, no notes with this. I guess we'll be surprised together. But you see how this is forming up? And think about the programs from last week, I don't know, the mind control programming, and think about how this is all looking, how this is really was at the time a masterpiece of programming. And I think this one might deal with now deal with the law enforcement angle of this, the intelligence angle of this. I believe this is the cut. Again, if not, hey, we'll all be surprised. This is, go ahead and cut C.
The conscience of the nation.
And now the police chief in Dallas says that he was informed by the FBI last night that they interrogated Oswald 2 weeks ago in Dallas, but he does not know the results of that interrogation, why it was ordered, or, he says, or neither was he advised that the interrogation had taken place until last night.
Is there any indication from the investigation to date that would indicate motive on the part of Mr. Oswald?
No. So far as I know, there's no indication of it.
Are you satisfied that you've got him traced directly from the scene of the shooting to his arrest?
Yes.
Can you count
well,
all
now,
the time?
Wait. You mean from the scene of the presidential assassination?
Yeah. To the time?
No, we haven't got all of
it. How much time is involved in there? How big a lapse of time?
Roughly 45 minutes, I believe.
And you still don't know. He doesn't have a car. Too far to walk.
I understand that he does not have a car.
Do you have anything other than circumstantial evidence right now?
Well, we have some physical evidence.
Can you tell us anything about that physical evidence?
No, sir, I wouldn't. I don't think I should discuss that.
Do you feel that this case is proceeding as efficiently as you would like it to proceed, or are some doubts beginning to grow as to whether this, in fact, is the man?
No doubts are beginning to grow, but it's a very difficult investigation.
Are the resources being applied to this investigation adequate, in your opinion?
Yes.
Would you describe them for us?
We're just using all means possible in the scientific investigations.
Okay, you can cut that. You can. The reason I put that up there was just for an example of how the narrative was taking shape within the law enforcement. For example, the FBI directing the narrative for that particular investigation. It's just wow and wow. Okay, there's a lot to be learned from that. But time constraints, let's move on. This, of course, is this clip here. Pay attention to this because, again, this is, again, think to recent events. Crooks. Yeah, crooks. Go ahead and play cut D quickly here.
Basement of the Dallas Municipal Building, and it is like an armed camp. For the past half hour, scores of police have been filing past me, carrying riot guns and rifles. Police officials are frankly worried. They don't want anything to happen to Oswald.
Thank you, Bill. We have other remote facilities at the county jail now.
awaiting the arrival of Lee Oswald from the city jail to the county jail. And for the situation there now, here is ABC's Roger Sharp reporting.
At the scene of last Friday's assassination, this is a curious crowd. No obvious anger in their faces, but all possible security precautions have been taken. Policemen are stationed at every 15 feet along the entire block. From inside the courthouse compound, the motor entrance to the county sheriff's office, our cameras will show the approach of the car that will carry Lee Harvey Oswald into the courthouse building.
We're inside the county courthouse, which the presumed assassin, Lee Harvey Oswald, is soon to enter. He'll be taken immediately to a booking room, and a very historic booking will be made. Next, into an ID room, where he'll be photographed and fingerprinted. And then, representatives of the press will have their first opportunity for a real front-to-front confrontation. Now, our big television cameras can't fit in that room, but we'll shoot that on sound film, and just as soon as that's processed, you'll be able to see it.
Okay, you got that. You do know how that ends, right? Of course you do. And the fact of the matter is they eliminated that one particular individual who they certainly didn't want to testify. They didn't. They couldn't have him testify. And of course, Jack Ruby came in and bada-bing, bada-bang. All right. So what am I saying here? What's this all about? So when I look back at the ground investigation we did, Eric the Tech did, Shatter Ops team did, and along with Save Them, investigators from each group, what we did, there was a lot I didn't say. Just a lot we didn't, I did not say. As the point person on the investigation dealing with certain people, there's a lot of things I didn't disclose, right? I hinted at some things, especially with the New York Post, because they experienced some of the same things. Let's go back to 63 one more time. How many people in this chat, do you know Deputy Sheriff Roger Craig? Does that name ring a bell to you? Deputy Sheriff, he was Deputy Sheriff in Dallas. Now, he appears in this 10.5-hour documentary, but he also appears, again, I couldn't take the background music, man, or the background noise, whatever that was. So I looked for interviews that were published later or that had the same information in it, and I found one. And here's Dallas County Deputy Sheriff. This is Cut 9, Eric the Tech. Now, we'll start at the beginning, and then we're going to kind of quickly move through it. Because again, this is important. The entire interview is about the entire piece is about 20 minutes in length, but it's so important to listen to what this man has to say. And this is one of several people that really didn't get a lot of traction, public notice, or if they did, they were silenced or somehow managed. And I don't like to be managed, but think about this as you watch this. Go ahead and cut 9. Cut 9.
Roger Dean Craig, former Dallas County Deputy Sheriff, winner of the Man of the Year Award in 1960 for law enforcement in recognition of outstanding performance in the line of duty. Where were you on the day of the assassination of John Kennedy?
I was standing out in front of the sheriff's office, which at that time was at 505 Main Street. They've moved it since then, but it was at 505 Main Street, directly in front of the front door.
Was the motorcade passing that area at that time?
No, we had to wait about 15 minutes before the motorcade arrived, but the sheriff had sent us out there that early to wait.
Were you merely a spectator or on duty?
Well, no, I was on duty, but a couple hours before Kennedy was to arrive, sheriff called us in, what I call the street people, the plainclothesmen, the detectives, he instructed us that we were to stand out in front and in no way take part in the security of that motorcade. That we were merely spectators and nothing more.
Did that seem unusual to you?
It did to me at the time because there were so many people around and so few Dallas police officers. This is one of the first things I noticed was the lack of Dallas police officers. Try to keep the people back. The president came by and they made the right turn onto Houston Street.
Okay.
And
that's fine. If you can advance that to about the 16-minute mark, again, in the interest of time, folks, again, HagmanPI.com, click on the episode title, and then it'll open up, and you can watch the entire interview. But if you can advance that to about 16 minutes or so. Now, there are other troubling aspects of this, but of course, the main one here, can you imagine the sheriff telling his deputies, no way are you to provide any protection of the motorcade of the president. Now, okay. Have we heard that before? Mm-hmm, yeah. Yes, we have. Again, the script, same. The operations, the same. Who gave that order to the sheriff? Who do you think did the sheriff just one that morning wake up and say, you know what? We're just not going to do this. You just stand around, look pretty, and watch the show. Think. If you were to pull off a mind control, a trauma-based mind control event, well, you don't want these people in your way. It's rather odd. Okay, so now, and he goes through the different oddities, you know, and the difference in rifles and the cartridges are all lined up in the sixth floor of the school book depository. And you know, they were from actually a different, I think they were from a 6.5 caliber as opposed to 7.65 caliber. But anyway, yeah, who cares about that, right? We'll go with the narrative. And then there was, you know, a lot of stuff in there. But what did he experience later? And folks, I'm telling you, these people don't have any new ideas in their head. Thankfully, maybe I wouldn't be sitting here. Maybe Eric the Tech wouldn't be sitting where he's at if they did. You want to kind of get some good insight into Butler? Mm-hmm. That I really haven't shared. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and play this from about the 16-minute mark.
Party line. And told him what flight I was coming in the middle on.
You know what? If you back it up to 15 minutes, I'm sorry about that. You can do it right on the screen. Back it up to about 15 minutes. Yeah.
Some information that they wanted. You know, in Dallas. Mm-hmm. And I parked my car on the side of the street, and I went to get this information. And when I came back and cranked up my car, it blew up. The engine caught fire, the hood came up, the firewall blew out. I had all the fuses blew, and I was burnt in the chest area, and I had pieces of glass and metal in the chest, small pieces. I don't know what they put in it, but
it's not possible the car itself could have malfunctioned, did it?
Not that much of an explosion, no. Uh-uh.
Somebody put a bomb in your car.
Somebody put something in it. This last time we had a case to work in West Texas in the Davis Mountains, and my boss sent me out there, and he called the client who was on a three-party line and told him what flight I was coming in the middle on, where I was going to rent my car, where I would meet him, and at what time. So I flew into Midland, I rented the car, and I arrived. I was about 2 miles from where I was supposed to meet the client, a mile or 2 miles from where I was supposed to meet him. I was supposed to meet him at 3 o'clock, and it was 2:55 then. And I rounded a curve, and there were two men standing outside of a car that was parked crossways in the road. And there wasn't anything to do but try to go around them, and I tried and I missed, and I went over the edge of the mountain and I rolled end over end for 90 feet or so. I broke my back in two places. I broke my left shoulder. I tore the ulnar nerve and ligaments out of my left elbow, crushed my left foot, my right leg. I spent a year in a hospital, 4 major surgeries, 2 on my back, and I'm now totally disabled in the back, partially disabled in the right leg, and unemployed again.
Do you think anyone else is going to come forward and tell it like it was, or as they saw it?
I don't know. I can't speak for anyone else.
Do you think it'll help your situation if someone else does? Think okay. They too would be
harassed. Yeah, bring it down. Spoiler alert, it didn't. It did not. Nope, and no, it didn't. The reason I put that in there again, because you've got this whistleblower or this law enforcement, credentialed law enforcement officer, witnessing events, bearing witness to firsthand events, both on the ground, the grassy knoll, the orders coming down from above, and seeing all of this and saying, you know what, none of this sounds right. So he begins giving interviews. And by the way, he was followed several times. There's so many things happened after he was providing information. So many things that happened to him. Gee, followed. Where have I heard that before? Where have I experienced that before? Well, New York Post, yeah. They know. Harassed. Oh, yeah. Shot at. Tell you. Okay. Sadly, on May 15th, 1975, this man reportedly committed suicide. He didn't, with a rifle that, yeah, with a rifle, shot to the chest. Boy, that sounds an awful lot. Awful familiar, doesn't it? Again, think about all of this. Think about all of these elements, even years later. But yeah, May 15th, 1975 was his last day on Earth. After, of course, all of the close calls and the harassment, the tapping of his phone, the blowing up of his car. Thankfully, that didn't happen this time. It's any of us. The accident, again, that didn't happen. But, you know, the harassment and the following and, yeah, don't come back here. This case is closed. Shut up. Go away. If you put up the attachment, if you don't mind, it's going around because you know why? I mean, you know, back then when Garrison, the DA from Louisiana, New Orleans, when he opened his investigation, yeah, he didn't have a good time of it at all. And he was thanked by every department of the government. Well, there's ex-Deputy Sheriff Craig. One of 30. Who either bore witness to the assassination or had some level of higher involvement. Yeah, as a law enforcement officer at the time or whatever. There it is. Dead. and with Garrison in that particular probe 30. So why did I bring all of this up? And I have other folks I've got, but why did I bring all of this up? And let me just say this, because I was looking at the chat too briefly. Let me say this, and I feel so strongly about this. You can put that down. I feel like, I got to say this. I really feel like just right now turning off the lights and leaving. You know why? Because I spent, let's see, three or four episodes on how to spot a PSYOP, or one of the episodes is how to spot a PSYOP, how not to fall for a PSYOP. And one of the biggest psychological operations I'm seeing today, I am watching in the chat, not to be disparaging, I'm watching in the chat. The Jews, the nation of Israel, can't do this. We can't fucking. You got to bring, Tucker Carlson and Nick Fuentes and Ben Shapiro and Mark Levine and everyone fighting and all this. And they killed Kirk and they did this and foreign influence. And my God, it's the nation state of Israel. The Jews are responsible. AIPAC. And I get it. But would you guys friggin' stop? For the love of everything that's holy, have you learned nothing? Seriously. I'm seeing this shit on the chat. Seriously. Have you learned nothing? You're being played. And you keep at it and going at it and going at it. Seriously, be played, argue, keep arguing, keep fighting, and keep, for goodness sakes, thank God you're keeping that fight alive. That's just exactly what they want you to do. They've written the script for you. You just pick a side. Great job. So screw it. You know what? I guess the whole friggin' hour I spent about what a psychological operation is, how to spot one, how not to fall for one. I guess I pissed away that friggin' hour, right? Because obviously I'm watching you fall for it. Picking a side because it's the right thing to, because I know better. I know better. Seriously. Folks, thanks for tuning in. And I hope you got something out of this. I don't know. I don't know anymore. I don't know. Maybe you did. Maybe it didn't. Hey, let me just check. Do we have a Muslim mayor in New York City? A Muslim communist mayor? Did that happen yet? Oh, yeah. Hey, there it is. He's a new face of the Democratic Party. God bless you. So keep talking about the Jews and the Zionists and Israel. Go ahead and keep talking about that. Because you know why? Because that's what they want you to do. Great job. I'm out of here. I'm out of here. I'm out of here.